Right now, though, as promised, Mike Doc Emrick joins us. He'll be leading the class into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. Chris Chelios, Keith Tkachuk, Gary Suter as well being a part of it. Ed Snyder going in. And Doc joins us here this afternoon. How you doing, Doc?
Good. It's good to be on the power play instead of a penalty kill. I like the show.
There you go. Thank you very much for that, Doc. Congratulations on your latest honor. Tell us about this and what it means to you to be enshrined in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame coming up here in a couple of months.
Well, it's quite an honor, of course, and especially when there are so many people that have devoted their lives to hockey and have had registered such careers like the other four gentlemen that I'm going in with. You realize that you're included in with a bunch of really esteemed people. And the fact that, momentarily, all five of us wound up at the same place at the same time, and that was in the World Cup of Hockey when Philadelphia opened its brand-new arena in August of 1996. And Chris Chelios, he admitted yesterday, had misgivings about joining the team because he was recovering from an injury, so he was brought in with Gary Suter and Keith Tkachuk and Bill Guerin and Mike Richter and a lot of other guys, and it turned out to be the next 3 weeks turned out to be very, very good moments for USA Hockey. And Ed Snyder, of course, had put an awful lot of sweat and an awful lot of his own money into a new arena in Philadelphia, which still looks new even after 15 years. So to be linked with those people at the same time, John Davidson and I got in free to watch the games and sort of share any thoughts that we had with people that were watching on television. So we all consider ourselves pretty star-crossed.
Doc, how did yesterday play itself out? Had you been tipped off that this honor was coming, or were you sideswiped by a phone call?
No, it wasn't sideswiped that day, but the identities of the other guys, we sort of knew who we were when we called in about 10 minutes earlier and learned all of that information. But it was I was in Pittsburgh, and sadly, you know, I'm a Pirates fan. I had been for 52 years. The first 34 were really good, and the last 18 have been pretty sad. But I was on my way to see the Pirates play. I try to see them play once a year, and usually it's in April before they drop out of contention. Well, they were still a contender when I went over to see them, but there's a debate as to whether they're a contender now. I hope so, because it's certainly been good for the city of Pittsburgh to have something to talk about in the summer before the Steelers and Penguins open camp. But that's when I got the call from Dave Ogren to let me know. So that was a great start to the day, and the boys in black and gold didn't necessarily help the day go along very well, but you recognize that's part of the deal.
No doubt. And I understand yesterday was your birthday as well, Doc. It's hard to believe you turned 65. Happy belated birthday. So this was a pretty good birthday present with the call you got, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it sure was. It's one of those birthdays you'll never forget when that happens, because there aren't many times in the course of your life when you're in the same room with your family and with those that you work with. And that's the rare thing that happens with a Hall of Fame situation, is members of your family are there and people that you work with and admire so much are also there at the same time. And there they are on separate tables, but very close to one another, and they normally, those worlds never intersect, but on that one day they do.
Doc, for all our listeners that don't know your story, and I include myself as one of them, how did you get your start? What was your first job working in hockey?
It was where I'm sitting today in Port Huron, Michigan in 1973. I had finished my graduate work at Bowling Green, and part of that included doing the second period of 18 home games for the Bowling Green Falcons every year. And I sent my tape out. This was about the third or fourth time in my career I'd done it. And one station, one team responded positively, and that was here. So we had the International Hockey League at that time. It was the mid-70s, so it was rough and tumble like every pro league was, especially at that time. But we were largely franchises in Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, and with one exception, Des Moines, Iowa. It was all bus travel. I think in 4 years here in Port Huron, I flew once, and that was a trip to Des Moines that they decided to fly us out for. The meal money was $3 unless the trip was over 200 miles, and then it was $7. And you worked alone on the road, and I enjoyed every minute of it. It seems like a rough life, but it really wasn't. When you like doing what you're doing, why you forget about the chaos of 10-cent beer nights in Toledo and the fact that not everybody had plexiglass. Some of them had wire screens there, and that guys got stitched up and sometimes had to have working casts that they played with, but they sure sacrificed a lot. That's the one thing that's unchanged is the character of players they did. They just go out and leave it all out there as best they can.
Doc Emrick joining us here on the Power Play, NHL Home Ice, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Doc, you know, when we talk to American hockey players, they either point to 1980, if you're of the older generation, guys like Billy Guerin, Mike Modano, et cetera, they point to 1980 as that seminal moment when they knew what they wanted to do with their careers, to play the game that they love. And when you're talking about the younger players, guys, you know, like Zach Parise and players like that, they point to 1996 and the World Cup of Hockey victory that you alluded to just a couple of minutes ago to start off the interview here. Give us your impression as to the state of American hockey right now. And we're not just talking about broadcasting, especially. We're talking about all the kids that have been developed in the past 15 years or so, namely due to the National Team Developmental Program.
Yeah, there will always be people that will find exceptions to almost anything that is laid out there. But if you consider the development programs in so many cities, I think we can credit a guy from Brantford, Ontario, for making that happen in one state in particular with his move from Edmonton down to Los Angeles, where there had been very few arenas. I mean, when we used to go into Los Angeles to play the Kings, there was a rink at Culver City that was the practice rink for the Kings, and then there was the Forum. And that was it. And that was it for pretty much the whole southern half of California. Well, now you don't need to go very far before you find a skating rink and a hockey rink all at the same place. And I think that has had a lot to do with it. Yeah, we've had guys develop from San Francisco area, from Southern California, out of the fine program at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, all over this country. Yes, there are pockets that are exceptions in terms of supporting NHL teams, and I guess we found one of those the hard way in Atlanta. But by and large, this program is burgeoning, and it continues to go largely because of the efforts of guys like Zach Parise, whom you mentioned. Even though it was a loss on the scoreboard, it was a boon to hockey in the United States. The performance that Brian Burke's team had, that he had put together, and that he had against Sidney Crosby and Team Canada in the Olympics. There are people in this country who do not watch hockey on a regular basis, but we know we have them at Olympic time, and that was a wonderful time for a key performance from the United States, that's for sure.
Doc, can you pinpoint one single experience as your favorite moment in all of hockey? I'm guessing each of the three Devils Cup victories have to be near the top.
Yeah, I suppose that would be one of them. In short order, I usually try to come up with a top 10, and then the number one seems to reverse itself all the time and be constantly changing. I think that that gold medal game between Canada and the U.S. is the most recent in memory, and so it's up there. One of the Boston games against Vancouver in the final I thought was just magnificent. It was another one of those Tim Thomas masterpieces, but I certainly won't forget that first one in 95 that the Devils won. John Davidson and I got to do it on Fox nationally in the United States. And to see that sort of an upset, because it wasn't forecast, the teams in that lockout shortened year hadn't played each other all year, so neither knew what to expect from the other. But I think the bigger surprise was waiting for Detroit when they saw how New Jersey played. So that moment when the Devils finally reached age, and even though they'd had a wonderful year against the Rangers the year before, I think that was probably one of the moments that'll stay with me a long time.
Doc, a couple of weeks ago, we found out that you were leaving the Devils to work exclusively for NBC Sports. Tell us about that. I know you alluded to your birth certificate and the reality setting in where you realize you can't be on the road as much perhaps as you were earlier. Rick Jenneret has come to terms with that here the past couple of years with the Sabres broadcasts. Tell us about the decision to leave the Devils to work for NBC exclusively.
Yeah, it was difficult because, I was there for 18 straight years and 21 overall. And during that time, you have a bond when you're traveling around with a team and with a fan base that you do not have when you're doing exclusively network shows, as I'll be doing now. But I had to, at age 65 coming, which did arrive yesterday, I tried to get them to change my certificate from 46 to 64, but they didn't see the humor in it. But at that point, you're not saying that you're feeble or that you're wobbly or falling over, but you're trying to project ahead over the next 5 to 10 years as to your workload. And there were times that it was 120 games in certain Olympic years. And one year in Torino, John Davidson and I compared notes at the end of the year. He had done 153 games and I had done 152. Well, that's extraordinary in terms of how the workload affects you, and you don't realize it till the end. But now at age 65, I just wanted to project ahead and try to lessen the workload, but still be on campus and still be going to classes. So that this was the way to do that. It was difficult leaving because during that period of time, the 18 years, both my parents died. We had some real tragedies among our canine family that were always responded to by the team, by Lou Lamoriello, and by the fan base. And you don't forget that kind of treatment, and you really hate to leave it behind. But at this time, it was a matter of trying to trim the workload by 20 to 30%.
Doc, one final one here for you. In the last couple of weeks, we've had phone topics that have ranged from the best broadcasting team to the best play-by-play man of all time, and your name has come up. Let me ask you, I mean, I've always said that guys like yourself and Sam Rosen, and the criticism always comes, you know what, I don't like this guy because he's too much of a homer, and he works for the team, and he never criticizes the team, and he never has anything complimentary to say about the other team out there on the ice. I always said about you and Sam especially that the advantage that maybe you had was that you were calling games on a national level as well. And I always felt when I listened to you call a game or Sam Rosen call a game that you guys recognized that we're two teams out there on the ice. I never got the impression that you guys were so biased in favor of one team over the other. Did that give you an advantage, guys like yourself and Sam, and the fact that you were calling national broadcasts?
I think maybe it did. I think maybe I appreciate your saying that because you never know how your work is received by others unless someone tells you. You can guess at what you think it is, but you really don't know until someone tells you, as you just have. I think the other thing, too, that Sam and I and probably Howie Rose with the Islanders would say is that we are in a three-team metropolitan area even when we do our regional games. And as a result, you have to be more cognizant, I think, of the fact that you have fans of different teams rather than in a one-team city that are listening to you. And so you want to make sure that you play it that way. I don't believe that the treatment of let's say, the Devils and their opponent is any different on a national telecast than it is on a local one, with one exception. Well, on a regional broadcast, we're probably talking about the Devils or about their players or how they are playing or not playing 70% of the time roughly, and the other team 30. And if we're doing a Devils game nationally, it's usually 50-50. That's what you target. That's what you hope for. So it's not that you're necessarily any different in your tone. It's just the percentage of information that you're giving out is more about the team that you're following on a regular basis.
Well said. Doc, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it here this afternoon. Again, happy belated birthday one day later. And again, congratulations on being a part of the class of 2011 for the United States Hockey Hall of Fame.
You're so kind to call, and it's fun talking with you guys. And I hope when we get it all hummed up again in another fall that you'll get back to me.